Well, it is a creepy and curious world out there, and this year we've been finding out about some of the activities you probably didn't know happened by critters you've probably never heard of before. And continuing our education this morning is Associate Professor Nigel Andrew from UNE. Possibly a love story, Nigel, that really shouldn't speak its name.
It's a beautiful thing.
Moths sharing their love with bats.
That's right.
What type of bat is this?
Well, just the background to this is what happens when you spend a bit too much time looking on Twitter. And so, in between your wonderful stories about what's happening in the Northwest, this came up on the Guardian Science page and also from a few other people that I'll link into. And it's a story that they just had as their title, saying, "Hawk moths zap bats with sonic blasts from their genitals."
What?
So, what could you do? You
had to go click
there.
On that.
You just had to simply click, and it's just a simple click away. And it's one of these, it sort of brought together kind of two different aspects of, you know, where I was thinking at the point, because I was also thinking about science communication. And I was reading a book about how to communicate science, and one of the ways that they say is good to get a general audience into science is to firstly talk about sex, then food, then laughter, and then finally get into the intelligence. And I thought, well, this has already got, you know, this has got all the ingredients of a wonderful science story.
Ticked all your boxes.
That's right, yes. in a way that it only can at certain times, you know, especially after I had a cup of coffee. So, yeah, I could go there. But it was, so the... It is just a phenomenal story. After hearing the headline, going that's a great headline. I was thinking, how can I put that into one of my grant applications? But maybe not this morning. But
okay.
The background is that there is this. So bats and moths are night flies, and what you find with bats, obviously they're the predators, and moths in most cases are the prey. Now, we sort of always have a love-hate relationship with moths, A, because particularly there's some major pest species, which are moths, particularly the caterpillars, but also, you know, they will live with us as well. You find pantry moths and clothes moths. But in general, there's about 100,000 species of moths and butterflies. Moths and butterflies are in the order Lepidoptera, so they're sort of together as a major group. And in Australia, we've got about 21,000 species of the Lepidoptera, of which only 500 species of butterflies. So we have very few butterflies, but most of the diversity is actually in moths, and we rarely see them because they're night flies. And this beautiful relationship between bats and moths is not just, it's beautiful in a sense, but it's also an evolutionary arms race. It's effectively a war between them because there's predator and prey. The bats are... They put out echolocation, so it's a biosonar. So they will actually sort of use their mouth to put out a high pitch sort of noise and wait for the echo to come back and actually determine where their prey is. And the moths have to, if they get picked up, they obviously get fed upon. Now there's a group of moths called hawk moths, and they're the scientific name of them is sphingids. And they're mainly tropical species. But these guys, you know, if you usually see a moth in your house or maybe, you know, a Helicoverpa type moth, they're pretty chunky. They look fairly, you know, they're full of sort of scales and they don't look like
your laundry and usually
right.
Your pantry as well.
That's
you know,
right.
Whatever they've been into.
And they're not the greatest flyers in the world, but these hawk moths are aerial acrobats. Ooh. They're phenomenal. And so if they get picked up by a bat, they have the ability to actually attempt to outmaneuver them.
Right.
But also they can outmaneuver them to a point, but what they also do is they can emit their own sound, their ultrasonic reply to the echolocation. And it's only been sort of, they only found it recently. So this was a paper that came out in Biology Letters only a few weeks ago, that they found these hawk moths up in they're in Borneo. So the researchers went up to Borneo to actually find this. They actually found that they can produce these ultrasonic replies to the echolocation, which they think has a few different roles. It either can just freak the bat out, going, "Oh my God, something's responded to this," and it can actually confuse them. And so they get this response back. and they don't know what to do. But that split second is just enough for these hawk moths to actually fly away.
To evade them.
And the neat thing is that the noise comes out of their genitals. The males actually grate these scales on the outer surface of the genitals together. So they grate them together to produce this high-pitched noise. But interestingly enough, the females produce it in a completely different way. So they actually have a different mechanism where they pull their genitalia inwards so that the genital scales rub against the abdomen. So the males and females are doing the same, have got the same ability, but they're doing it in very different ways. With insects, just the background to their morphology. So they've got the head, the thorax. The thorax is where the legs and the wings come off. And the abdomen is the third part at the end, and the genitalia is right at the end of the abdomen. So it's right at the back end of these guys, and they're using that in very different ways to freak out the bats.
Yeah, I think for the first time in my entire life tonight, I don't have any questions. I never ever thought we'd have this conversation. But,
well, I'll give you more information.
Yeah. Please do.
It's actually a phenomenal strategy that they've got to do this, because not only are they making this sound at the back end, but, you know, when you think of a moth, they don't have ears, you know, they can't hear like we do. So what they've actually done, they actually have modified feeding structures. So when their mouth is, they've got these palps that usually hold the food on. And what the moths have done is that they've modified these little palps into organs which actually effectively work like an ear. So they're actually picking up the echolocation from the bats in these modified feeding structures. The information goes back to their brain, and then they actually modify that signal to go down to their, effectively to their genitalia, and actually use it to produce this sound. And again, it's just quite phenomenal, because most animals don't, you know, these modified structures, they still can reproduce quite fine. And usually insects are very specialised in their different body parts. So, for example, with mammals and also humans, you know, we eat and we breathe through the same sort of mouth part. And so that's why we can choke if we're listening to stories like this and attempting to have a coffee or eat a donut. We have, evolutionary, we've got the one sort of body part that does two very important roles. Insects, their breathing holes are called spiracles, and they're found all along the body. So they can eat quite happily and never choke, because the air goes in all the way through their body and it goes straight to the organs which need it. And this is one of the few times where genitalia is usually thought of, you know, it's got a main, you know, this priority is for reproducing. And it's just phenomenal that they've been able to modify it in such a way that, you know, to actually use it like this. I mean, the evolution, and this is where this sort of arms race comes into play, because it's what they've got, their primary role is to reproduce, but in order to reproduce they can't get eaten. And so they've found that, however, somehow it's just really interesting from a biological point of view, is how they would have come up with this type of strategy of actually rubbing these plates, these genital plates, together on their abdomen, and coming up with a sound. And this is just not a basic sound; it's a really high pitched sound. So these, the bats usually hear like their range frequency. They can usually hear up to 212 kilohertz, and previously, moths have been usually making noises about 150 kilohertz. So that's way outside our hearing range in most cases. But these guys can actually use frequencies up to 250 kilohertz. Now, they're actually making sounds outside the range of bats as well. And what has also been thought about this making this noise is that they're putting bats off by freaking them out, but they're also using that sound range to use them for attracting mates. So they actually use their genitalia not just to have sex and not just to get rid of the bats, but also to make sounds to attract the opposite sex.
I wondered what impact it had on their reproduction. So it actually enhances their chances of reproducing.
Yeah, it can actually, depending on how high, they can actually modify the pitch of this this ultrasound. So one potential pitch can be to try and ward away the bats, and they can do a potentially higher ultrasound to actually attract mates. And that in itself, again, is just phenomenal in terms of how they can use multiple, you know, different frequencies for different, you know, life events, effectively. I think life events is a good way to call it.
Nigel Andrew is with us, and he's an associate professor at UNE, talking about this interesting romance between moths and bats this morning. So I guess it serves two purposes in distracting the bats for a second, mm-hmm. but does it jam the bats' radar as well?
Well, this is where, again, because that's potentially one of the things it could do. What bats also do with their sonar is that, depending on the size of the bats, they will actually have different frequencies that they use and different way they focus it. So as night flies, they don't just see, like for humans, we just have our visual field, you know, pretty much forward. And if we want to see it from side to side, we have to move our face, you know, from left to right. The bats can actually change the actual focus of their sonar, so they can get a much wider, effectively, field of view. So they're seeing with sonar. And different size bats will actually have different focuses of that sonar. So some of them will have a very wide field of view, and others have a very narrow field of view. And it was originally thought that those sort of widths that they can see is effectively due to body size. So a bigger bat, you know, can see a lot wider, and a smaller bat can only see at a, you know, very narrow angle. But again, what they've after a few experiments with the bats, they've actually found that the smaller ones actually use a more focused sonar, so they can actually find smaller objects because they've got smaller mouths. So they, when they emit their echolocation, they can only get to only to such a pitch. So they're morphologically only got a smaller sort of mouth size, so they have a much focused sonar. But that also means that they find smaller prey within that field of view, effectively. So if they want to have if they want to forage over a wider plain, they actually have to move their head a lot more to focus their echolocation.
Isn't that extraordinary? And how did they, scientists, come across this? I mean, how did they manage to discover this?
That's where you start tethering animals to bits of string. Literally, there is with the hawk moss, what they did originally is they collected the moths in the field, took them back to a field laboratory, and had a soundproof booth. So it's effectively like a studio that you put the insects onto, you know, you bring them in, and you actually connect the moths to effectively a bit of string, so they can still fly around. So you might put them around their abdomen, so they can still fly around, and then different types of sounds get emitted to them, and the scientists have, you know, different recording facilities, but also different cameras on the moths, and look at how their behaviour changes. So they'll firstly have a control experiment where they'll fly the moth around and see how it goes. The next step will actually be to have the moth flying around and emit normal sort of background sounds that they might hear during the night, and then they'll pulse in an echolocation, a back call. So they've recorded the back call, and they'll pump that in and see what the moth's response is. And they'll do this in multiple times with multiple different individuals to see if there's a consistent response or if it's an unusual response from an individual. And there, they will then fly around. And what they've also found is when they're recording the emissions from the moths, they can only get it to such a frequency because, again, our equipment, like the recording equipment, can only get to a certain sort of amplitude or a certain sort of frequency, and then it stops. And so the moths are still sending out calls, but they can't actually be recorded because, you know, the scientists' equipment can't get actually any higher because no one's ever tested it that high before. It's a lot of tethering moths in soundproof booths.
You said these are kind of tropical moths, bats and moths, but does anything like this happen in sort of our part of the world?
Well, this is actually found in, they've found the hearing of moths has actually evolved at least 19 times over five insect orders. So it's found in moths, but it's also found in a whole range of other night-flying animals. So hawk moths are found, you know, in this part of the world. In summer, you'll find hawk moths around, and you'll find bats. You know, if you know, sometimes you get moths in the house, but every so often you can get a bat in the house as well. So they are interacting. Wherever you find moths and bats, they'll be interacting, and they would have had that interaction over, you know, millions of years. So there is nothing to stop, you know, moths and bats having that same sort of arrangement, if we can call it that, in this part of the world, because they've evolved together.
And do you think they'll just keep evolving and doing that?
Well, that's the great thing about these sort of interactions is the bats over, you know, they are able to feed on the moths. Then the moths, because moths go through at least one generation a year, if not more, they can start to evolve different strategies to overcome the bats' responses to them. And then once they've done that, what might be expected over the next, say, you know, couple of generations of bats is that they could well change their echolocation, their calling abilities to try and overcome this, if they are actually stopping the ability of the echolocation working for bats, bats will attempt to overcome that. So it is effectively an arms race. It's one of, you know, we think of, if you put it into a human context, you think of an arms race as different, you know, countries building up arms and trying to get one up over the other.
Yeah.
It's happy. This is
different arsenal, changing it.
And that's effectively what happens in evolution. From a biological point of view, is that, you know, different groups of animals which are interacting, and one's being a predator, one's being a prey, will go through this arms race and try and overcome the other one.
Just extraordinary. Just extraordinary this morning. Thank you so much, Nigel. There you go.
You're welcome. Something to think about.
This will be interesting dinner conversation tonight.
I know.
Did you hear this morning? This
just,
fellow was
just
saying.
Remember, sonic blast from their genitals. <That's> okay.
All right. Now that's a scary B-grade movie.
That's right.
That's a very scary B-grade movie.
I haven't seen it, but gee whiz, it'd be great.